What if internet platforms are responsible for everything their AI chatbots say? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. So much of the internet we have today rests on the bedrock of a federal law that shields tech companies from liability for the content users post online. Everything from the AOL chat rooms of yore to modern social media likely wouldn't exist without Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act. The idea is they aren't acting like traditional publishers creating content, they're merely hosting it. But new generative artificial intelligence tools like DALL-E or ChatGPT that generate images or text, well, they're kind of different, says Matt Perrault, director of the Center on Technology Policy at UNC Chapel Hill. He recently wrote an essay for Lawfare about the implications of these tools not being protected by Section 230.
Platforms like ChatGPT and other generative AI products will bear some liability, I think, at least in some courts. And I think there will be critics who will think that that's a good thing. And the rationale there is by bearing more liability costs, those platforms will be incentivized to build their tools in ways that reduce the likelihood that illegal content is produced in some form. And if generative AI tools are stunted by legal risk, I think there's going to be a lot of innovation that's left on the table.
When it comes to this kind of dichotomy of creating versus hosting, I think there's probably still a lot of debate to be had about whether tools like this are actually creating when they're basically scraping, you know, existing user content from the internet in order to generate what they're generating. I mean, do you think that there's any daylight there to say that this is not creating content?
I certainly think that there is, and I think this is probably going to be a topic that's actively litigated. Once there's that possibility, the generative AI platforms will be held liable in certain circumstances. That means the tools will be deployed and designed in ways to reduce that legal risk. I think it means there are fewer startups that will enter the market. When you lose that innovation potential, there will be consequences for society. If you believe that generative AI has the possibility of connecting people to better information, to enabling people to pursue various different things in their own lives that are important to them, when the tools are built in more limited ways and we realize less of that value, there are meaningful costs.
Yeah, how would you describe how important Section 230 protections have been to kind of the development of our modern internet economy and what it would mean for this not to apply here?
They've been critical. So the scholar Jeff Kossoff has sort of famously said that the Section 230 is the 26 words that created the internet. Some people, I think of that as just enabling tech companies to grow and be responsible for harmful social effects. But Section 230 actually is not just about liability protection so that platforms can host whatever they want. Section 230 is about enabling tech platforms to have terms of service and to actually moderate content and to actually remove harmful content from their services and to do that without being worried about being dragged into court when they do that. So it actually has enabled not just hosting content, but also the content moderation that we have. And my view is that it's probably the correct interpretation of the current law to find that generative AI tools fall outside of its scope in many circumstances, not all. It's a product-specific inquiry. But I don't think it is the right thing to have, if we want this technology to flourish and if we want it to be realized to its fullest social potential, for that to be the liability regime that we have going forward. The possibility of being dragged into court for the most expansive implementations of this technology will mean that we don't see them in the way that we would otherwise. And I think that that there will be social consequences to having the technology marginalized to narrow use cases that minimize legal risk.
What would be sort of like the worst case scenario in terms of a challenge to Section 230 protections for this kind of technology? How could that play out?
So I guess my greatest fear is the one that's hardest to quantify, which is there is significant legal liability for enabling these tools to do the things that will be most beneficial to society in the long run. If you think that these tools are going to be harmful, if you think that the main thing that they will do is enable people to do bad things in the world and create harm to our society, then you'll think that that's a good thing. You will think that having a liability regime where they can get dragged into court fairly easily, and there are steep legal costs to deploying this technology in the fullest way, if you have that view, then you'll think this liability regime is a good thing. My view is that we couldn't have anticipated 20 years ago the full range of tools that the internet would enable. And I understand that there are significant harms to many of those tools, but there are enormous, enormous benefits. And taking those benefits off the table and eliminating future innovation, my view is that that's likely to have an enormous and wide array of harms in terms of barriers to entry and access information, in terms of people's ability to use information in positive ways and access information in positive ways that create value to them and value to society. And the current liability regime makes it less likely that we will ever see those things.
If generative AI tools can't be protected under Section 230, how would you envision a regulatory framework around this technology moving forward?
One is that we could have a policy experiment to better understand how generative AI works in practice. Mm-hmm. So you could set up this test for a limited period of time. During that time, there could be expanded liability protection. You could have that test sunset after that set period. So it could be 18 months or 2 years. And during that period, you could require platforms to have significant transparency. They provide data to researchers. They provide data access to researchers so that researchers can study the harms and the benefits of the technology. You could require regular reporting and monitoring so that we are studying closely, looking in detail at what these tools do in practice so that we can learn from that.
Matt Perrault at UNC Chapel Hill. And now for some related links. Of course, we've got Matt Perrault's full essay for Lawfare, where he goes much deeper into the legal arguments and innovation implications. It's linked at our site, marketplacetech.org. And you don't have to take his word for whether Section 230 will apply to generative AI. The Washington Post reports that Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch has already waded into the issue. During oral arguments last week, Justice Gorsuch mused,
I mean, artificial intelligence generates poetry, it generates polemics today. That would be content that goes beyond picking, choosing, analyzing, or digesting content. And that is not protected. Let's assume that's right, okay?
That case at hand last week was Gonzalez v. Google. It concerns whether recommendation algorithms, like the ones that populate your next video on YouTube, are protected by Section 230. Last October on the show, we spoke to Santa Clara University law professor Eric Goldman about the implications of that case when the Supreme Court announced it would take it up, which feels so long ago now, back when chatbots were just those annoying pop-ups that hounded you on retail websites. Jesus Alvarado produced this episode. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.